You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Colorado Business Digest, narrated by Mike Hesser, with sources including ColoradoBiz.com, Colorado Springs Business Journal, and Denver 7 News. Our first article is titled, In the Rapidly Shifting World of Work, Many Employees Are Unclear What's Expected of Them. To begin the article, there is an ad that has a gray box with a picture of an office building. At the top it says Taft, Sherman and Howard. The copy says the modern law firm in the Mountain West. Sherman and Howard has joined Taft, now 1,000 attorneys strong. This article is dated March 21st, 2025. When Nikhil Inman started a new job coaching first-generation college students, she looked forward to meeting them one-on-one to talk about how to surmount obstacles and find resources to succeed. Instead, she and her fellow success coaches at a community college in North Carolina spent a year mired in paperwork, tasked with reviewing applications from aspiring undergraduates. They never did get to meet with the students. Admissions work kind of took over what we were supposed to do, Inmid, 34, said. I felt disengaged with the position, more so because I just didn't feel valued. It's disorienting when a job turns out to be completely different than advertised or morphs into something we didn't expect. But more U.S. workers have reported feeling disconnected from their organization's purpose and unclear on how to meet expectations since the coronavirus pandemic changed the way we work, according to a new Gallup analysis. Just under half of U.S. employees who participated in a Gallup survey in November strongly agreed that they know what is expected of them at work, which is one of the factors the polling firm uses to measure employee engagement. In January 2020, the figure stood at 56%. The new survey showed that new employees, younger employees, people in white-collar industries like technology, insurance, and finance, and those in hybrid work arrangements were especially likely to report that expectations for their roles weren't clear. The findings make intuitive sense. Managers and employees have bushwhacked their way through disruptive changes since COVID-19 first upended public life 5 years ago. In late 2024, about one quarter of employees with the ability to work remotely were doing so exclusively, up from around 1 in 10 in 2019, Gallup found. Another 55% were working in the office some days and remotely the rest, according to the 2024 data, up from about one-third in 2019. More recently, layoffs at tech companies and in the government and other sectors have found organizations with fewer people to handle the load, and expectations aren't always adjusted to the new realities. With all the rounds of layoffs, people's scope and responsibilities are shifting constantly, said Jeremy Gudeplan, an executive leadership trainer and coach based in New York. You think about the ones left behind, and the work is just getting piled on them. Here are some strategies for eliminating confusion when the scope and responsibilities of a job are ambiguous. 1. Establish expectations early. Spell out or make sure you understand what a new role or project entails, along with any relevant deadlines or performance markers, from the beginning so everyone agrees on what's realistic and wanted. Writing it down in a shared document can help prevent future misunderstandings. When a successful real estate developer asked Amber Krasinski to film and produce 85 TikTok videos in 3 hours, she thought hard about whether she really wanted to take him on as a client. The job might be good exposure for her communications agency, Ivy Hill Strategies, but Krasinski knew it would be impossible to complete in so little time. She turned it down. Krasinski regularly gives her client progress updates and tries to make a practice of asking clarifying questions before taking on new projects. Anytime I have a conversation with a prospective client, I have that in the back of my mind, Krasinski said, avoiding that people-pleasing side that says, you can figure it out, you can do it. You don't want to let anybody down, but you also need to set yourself up for success. Number two, seek frequent feedback. No one wants to spend all day in meetings, but more frequent check-ins with a manager or supervisor may help staff members who are unsure if they are prioritizing their time appropriately or don't know what they are supposed to be doing. Organizations can explore different ways of building connection between employees and providing more opportunities for feedback, which can result in better understanding of workplace expectations. Brian Smith, founder and managing partner of IA Business Advisors, said his company hosts gratitude sessions for 30 minutes each week. The first 20 minutes are led by a coach who advises attendees on issues such as how to effectively manage time or deal with challenging customers. Highlighting specific problems and strategies can help workers understand what's expected of them. At the end of the session, participants have an opportunity to share what they're grateful for. Number three, start the conversation. Workers don't have to wait for a supervisor to seek feedback or clarify expectations. You can suggest a quick check-in at any point if you're unsure how to prioritize long-term goals or short-term deadlines. Managing upwards is going to make your life easier, said Dale Wheelahan, founder of 4-Day World, a think tank that explores new models of work. Don't assume that management has all the answers. They're probably just as lost. However, in hierarchical organizations, where questioning management may be viewed negatively, it's important to be delicate, he said. To initiate a feedback discussion, you can ask to meet with a manager about a current project. Wheelahan outlined how to approach the conversation if the meeting gets scheduled. Start by sharing what you understand your assignment to be. Then request the manager's confirmation or clarification by saying something such as, I just want to make sure there's alignment here, he advised. Ask about anything else you need to clarify and close out the conversation by saying, from what I understand from this conversation, my role is this. Have I understood that correctly? Follow up with an email restating what you agreed to, Wheelahan said. Number four, trust your instincts. With workplaces experiencing so many changes, employees can find themselves jumping from one assignment to the other, distracted by new responsibilities picked up after colleagues were laid off, or adjusting to spending more time physically in the office. If it all feels too chaotic, take a moment to pause, revisit your priorities, and then the work on the most important task. If something doesn't feel right, don't just accept it, Inman said. Whatever that avenue is, if it's just staying and trying to make it better or leaving, just don't give up on what you know is right. Our next article is titled, Attacks on Tesla Dealerships Spike as Musk Takes Prominent Role in White House. Dated March 19, 2025. There's an ad in the center of the article. At the top reads, Griffith's Law, PC, Family Law, Civil and Business Litigation. The copy reads, we litigate, we collaborate, we protect your future. Cybertrucks set ablaze, bullets and Molotov cocktails aimed at Tesla showrooms. Attacks on property carrying the logo of Elon Musk's electric car company are cropping up across the U.S. and overseas. While no injuries have been reported, Tesla showrooms, vehicle lots, charging stations, and privately owned cars have been targeted. There's been a clear uptick since President Donald Trump took office and empowered Musk to oversee a new Department of Government Efficiency that's slashing government spending. Experts on domestic extremism say it's impossible to know yet if the spate of incidents will balloon into a long-term pattern. In Trump's first term, his properties in New York, Washington, and elsewhere became a natural place for protest. In the early days of his second term, Tesla is filling that role. Tesla is an easy target, said Randy Blazak, a sociologist who studies political violence. They're rolling down our streets. They have dealerships in our neighborhoods. Musk critics have organized dozens of peaceful demonstrations at Tesla dealerships and factories across North America and Europe. Some Tesla owners, including a U.S. senator who feuded with Musk, have vowed to sell their vehicles. But the attacks are keeping law enforcement busy. Prosecutors in Colorado charged a woman last month in connection with attacks on Tesla dealerships, including Molotov cocktails thrown at vehicles and the words Nazi cars spray-painted on a building. And federal agents in South Carolina last week arrested a man they say set fire to a Tesla charging station near Charleston. An agent from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives wrote in an affidavit that authorities found writings critical of the government and DOGE in his bedroom and wallet. There's a picture from Seattle showing several people outside a Tesla showroom holding signs. The main sign says, "Stop Musk to save lives and restore democracy." Some of the most prominent incidents have been reported in left-leaning cities in the Pacific Northwest, like Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, where anti-Trump and anti-Musk sentiment runs high. The statement made mention of sending a message based on these beliefs, the agent wrote. An Oregon man faces charges after allegedly throwing several Molotov cocktails at a Tesla store in Salem, then returning another day and shooting out windows. In the Portland suburb of Tigard, more than a dozen bullets were fired at a Tesla showroom last week, damaging vehicles and windows, the second time in a week that the store was targeted. Four Cybertrucks were set on fire in a Tesla lot in Seattle earlier this month. On Friday, witnesses reported a man poured gasoline on an unoccupied Tesla Model S and started a fire on a Seattle street. In Las Vegas, several Tesla vehicles were set ablaze early Tuesday outside a Tesla service center, where the word "resist" was also painted in red across the building's front doors. Authorities said at least one person threw Molotov cocktails, crude bombs filled with gasoline or other flammable liquid, and fired several rounds from a weapon into the vehicles. Was this terrorism? Was it something else? It certainly has some of the hallmarks that we might think: the writing on the wall, potential political agenda, an act of violence. Spencer Evans, the special agent in charge of the Las Vegas FBI office, said in a news conference, "None of those factors are lost on us." Tesla was once the darling of the left, helped to viability by a $465 million federal loan during the Obama administration. The company popularized electric vehicles and proved, despite their early reputation, that they didn't have to be small, stodgy, underpowered, and limited in range. More recently, though, Musk has allied himself with the right. He bought the social network Twitter, renamed it X, and erased restrictions that had infuriated conservatives. He spent an estimated $250 million to boost Trump's 2024 Republican campaign, becoming by far his biggest benefactor. Musk continues to run Tesla, as well as X and the rocket manufacturer SpaceX, while also serving as Trump's advisor. Tesla stock doubled in value in the weeks after Trump's election, but has since shed all those gains. Trump gave a boost to the company when he turned the White House driveway into an electric vehicle showroom. He promoted the vehicles and said he would purchase an $80,000 Model S, eschewing his fierce press past criticism of electric vehicles. Tesla didn't respond to a request for comment. Musk briefly addressed the vandalism Monday during an appearance on Senator Ted Cruz's podcast, saying at least some of it is organized and paid for by left-wing organizations in America, funded by left-wing billionaires, essentially. "This level of violence is insane and deeply wrong," Musk wrote Tuesday on X, sharing a video of burning Teslas in Las Vegas. "Tesla just makes electric cars and has nothing to deserve these evil attacks." The progressive group Indivisible, which published a guide for supporters to organize Musk or Us protests around the country, said in a statement that all of its guidance is publicly available, and it explicitly encourages peaceful protest and condemns any acts of violence or vandalism. Some Tesla owners have resorted to cheeky bumper stickers to distance themselves from their vehicle's new stigma and perhaps deter would-be vandals. They say things like, "I bought this before we knew Elon was crazy," or, "I just wanted an electric car. Sorry, guys." Prices for used Cybertrucks, Tesla's most distinctive product, have dropped nearly 8% since Trump took office, according to Car Gurus, which aggregates used car vehicle listings. The market as a whole remained steady over the period. The White House has thrown its weight behind Musk, the highest-profile member of Trump's administration and a key donor to committees promoting Trump's political interests. Trump has said Tesla vandalism amounts to domestic terror, and Trump has threatened retribution, warning that those who target the company are going to go through hell. Attorney General Pam Bondi said she'd opened an investigation to see how this is being funded. Who is behind this? If you're going to touch a Tesla, go to a dealership, do anything, you better watch out because we're coming after you, Bondi said Friday on Fox Business Network. In a statement Tuesday, she vowed to continue investigations that impose severe consequences, including those operating behind the scenes to coordinate and fund these crimes. Colin Clark, a senior research fellow at the Soufan Center, said left-wing political violence tends to target property rather than people. He views the rise of neo-Nazi groups as a bigger security threat at this point. "It's not the type of act that I would prioritize," Clark said. "Not right now, compared to all the other threats that are out there." Teresa Ramsdell is the president of the Tesla Owners of Washington State, a club for Tesla enthusiasts, and she and her husband own three of them. "Hate on Elon and Trump all you want. That's fine and dandy. It's your choice," she said. "It doesn't justify ruining someone's property, vandalizing it, destroying it, setting it on fire. There's other ways to get your voice heard that's more effective." Someone recently slapped a No Elon sticker on the tailgate of her Cybertruck, but she said she doesn't intend to stop driving her Teslas. Other club members have taken a similar view, she said. "I love my car. It's the safest car," Ramsdell said. "I'm not going to let someone else judge me for the car I drive." Our next article is titled Alphabet to Buy Cybersecurity Startup for $32 billion. Dated March 18, 2025. Google owner Alphabet will buy cybersecurity firm Wiz for $32 billion in a deal set to boost the tech giant's in-house cloud computing amid burgeoning artificial intelligence growth. If closed, the cash transaction announced Tuesday will become Google's most expensive acquisition in the company's 25-year history. The purchase gives Google new momentum in its efforts to compete in the cloud computing business by offering more security for its services. Wiz and Google are both fueled by the belief that cloud security needs to be easier, more accessible, more intelligent, and democratized, so more organizations can adopt and use cloud and AI securely, Wiz CEO Asaf Rappaport said in a blog post. The company says Wiz will join Google Cloud, and that this deal represents a company investment to accelerate two large and growing trends in the AI era, improved cloud security, and the ability to use multiple clouds. Together, Google CEO Sundar Pichai said in a statement, "Google Cloud and Wiz will turbocharge improved cloud security and the ability to use multiple clouds." Asaf Rappaport, co-founder and CEO, added that the deal will bolster our mission to improve security and prevent breaches by providing additional resources and help deep AI expertise. Wiz, based in New York, was founded in 2020 makes security tools designed to shield the information stored in remote data centers from intruders. Google has had its eyes on Wiz for some time. The purchase price announced Tuesday surpasses a reported $23 billion buyout proposal that Wiz rejected last July. The proposed buyout will get a close look from antitrust regulators. While many expect the Trump administration to be more friendly to business deals, it has also shown skepticism of big tech. Also, the new Federal Trade Commission chair, Andrew Ferguson, has vowed to maintain a tough review process for mergers and acquisitions. Our next article is titled, "The Growth of Women's Sports is Spurring a Building Boom," dated March 17, 2025. While it might not be the flashiest way to chart the rapid growth of women's professional sports, a building boom is showing that investors are paying attention. There's already a dedicated women's soccer stadium in the National Women's Soccer League, and another one is planned. The WNBA has seen a jump in new practice facilities, including a purpose-built training center for the Indiana Fever, Caitlin Clark's team. These new facilities, often designed specifically for women, help teams attract and retain elite talent while also allowing for possible new revenue streams, like sponsorship opportunities. I would argue in the last 2.5 years, we've made more progress than anyone thought would be possible, and our work is not done, NWSL Commissioner Jessica Berman said. The NWSL's Portland Thorns and the city's yet unnamed WNBA team for 2026 are among the teams that have benefited. The Bahal family, which owns both teams, is building a $150 million training facility to be used by both teams, a unique partnership between the two leagues. Just 10 years ago, stories about the lack of proper facilities in the NWSL began to surface. Former players for Sky Blue, which later rebranded as Gotham FC, practiced on a field with a porta-potty for a restroom. Former U.S. goalkeeper Hope Solo blogged in 2016 about some of the dismal conditions she experienced while playing in the league. Last year, the NWSL's Chicago Stars were left scrambling after a music festival was booked for Bridgeview Village that would have disrupted fans attending a home match. While the music festival later moved, the incident highlighted the issues some teams have with stadiums that are not their own. Many pro women's teams must share facilities with men's teams and other entities. The arrival of Clark supercharged the WNBA last year, with league attendance nearly doubling over 2023. The Fever in January announced a new $78 million training facility to open in 2027 that will give the team its own space apart from the NBA's Pacers. The Chicago Sky, which has practiced at a public recreation center, will move into its own training facility ahead of the 2026 season. The NWSL's Kansas City Current opened the first purpose-built women's soccer stadium last year. Denver, which was awarded the league's 16th team and begins play in 2026, pledged to build a privately financed stadium as part of its expansion bid. Bay FC is building a training center on Treasure Island, a former military base in the San Francisco Bay. Earlier this year, Angel City opened the NWSL's largest practice facility at Cal Lutheran University, which includes a 5,400-square-foot gym and even a children's playroom. There's not too many players, but for those of us that have been in the NWSL since its inception, we've played through a lot. We've played through understaffed teams, inadequate facilities, turf so hot it melted the bottom of my cleats, Angel City forward Kristen Press said. We've played through investigations and abuse. We've played without a players' association, without the opportunity to collectively bargain. We played without respect and dignity, and we did it because we believed in a day like today. Infrastructure is a natural outgrowth of the investment pouring into women's sports as interest rises. Athletes are even joining in. New York Liberty star Sabrina Ionescu recently joined the ownership group of Bay FC, And tennis star Serena Williams bought a stake in the WNBA's new Toronto team. Karina LeBlanc, who went from goalkeeper to general manager of the Portland Thorns and now works for the Bahal's family's RAG Sports, said increased visibility creates more fans, fans create more interest, and interest translates to investment. Everybody plays a role, whether you're a fan who's buying a ticket, whether you're turning on the TV. Everyone can have an impact on the investment of women's sports, LeBlanc said. An investment doesn't just have to be financial. It's the energy, it's the team, it's all of it. And in this time and moment right now, if we all lean into the little part that we can do, just watch it in 10 years. Such investment is reflected in team valuations. After the Bahals acquired Portland's WNBA expansion team for $125 million, bids for a 16th franchise were expected to reach $200 million and beyond. Disney CEO Bob Iger and wife Willow Bay, dean of USC's Journalism and Communications School, acquired a controlling interest in Angel City FC last year at a $250 million valuation. While in the past, women's sports have been championed to promote equity and representation, the conversation has shifted as revenue projections have surpassed $1 billion globally. It's now big business. In order to maintain the recent growth in investment, those in and around women's sports must continue to move it beyond using sports as an advocacy tool and far more toward treating their assets as compelling businesses with economic upside, said David M. Carter, founder of the Sports Business Group and adjunct professor of sports at USC. Our next article is titled, Regulators Recall Nearly All Cybertrucks, dated March 21, 2025. U.S. safety regulators on Thursday recalled virtually all Cybertrucks on the road, the eighth recall of the Tesla-made vehicles since deliveries to customers began just over a year ago. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's recall, which covers more than 46,000 Cybertrucks, warned that an exterior panel that runs along the left and right side of the windshield can detach while driving, creating a dangerous road hazard for other drivers, increasing the risk of a crash. The stainless steel strip, called a cant rail assembly, between the windshield and the roof on both sides, is bound to the truck's assembly with a structural adhesive, the NHTSA report said. The remedy uses an adhesive that's not been found to be vulnerable to environmental embrittlement, the NHTSA said, and includes additional reinforcements. Tesla will replace the panel free of charge. Owner notification letters are expected to be mailed May 19, 2025. The recall of 46,096 Cybertrucks covers all 2024 and 2025 model years, manufactured from November 13, 2023 to February 27, 2025. The NHTSA order says that Tesla's become aware of the problem earlier this year. Videos posted on social media showing people ripping the panels off of Cybertrucks with their hands have gone viral in recent days. The Cybertruck, which Tesla began delivering to buyers in late 2023, has been recalled eight times in the past 15 months for safety problems, including once in November because a fault in an electric inverter can cause the drive wheels to lose power. Last April, the futuristic-looking trucks were recalled to fix acceleration pedals that can get stuck in the interior trim. Other recalls were related to windshield wipers and the display screen. In the latest setback for the Elon Musk-owned electric automaker, which has come under attack since President Donald Trump took office and empowered Musk to oversee a new Department of Government Efficiency that's slashing government spending. While no injuries have been reported, Tesla showrooms, vehicle lots, charging stations, and privately owned cars have been targeted. Even before the attacks ramped up in recent weeks, Tesla has been struggling, facing increased competition from rival electric vehicles, particularly out of China. Though largely unaffected by Thursday's recall announcement, Tesla's shares have plummeted 42% in 2025, reflecting newfound pessimism as sales crater around the globe. With regard to Thursday's recall, Cybertruck owners may contact Tesla customer service at 877-798-3752. Our next article is titled, March Madness Isn't Just About the Games. Here's how much economic activity it could bring to Colorado. Dated March 20, 2025. Gates are now open for the first rounds of games of the NCAA tournament at Ball Arena, but the number of spectators is just one metric the state is looking at during March Madness. Four games are scheduled to take place in the Mile High City Thursday, running from 11:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. The Wisconsin Badgers take on the Montana Grizzlies at 11:30 a.m. Brigham Young University will then battle it out with the Virginia Commonwealth University Rams for the first afternoon game at 2:05 p.m. The Texas A&M Aggies will face the Yale Bulldogs at 5:25 p.m. And finally, the Michigan Wolverines will go up against the University of California San Diego Tritons at 8 p.m. The last time Denver hosted March Madness in 2023, it saw one of the highest spikes in foot traffic. When March Madness is hosted here in Denver, the excitement and energy spill into the surrounding neighborhoods. Britt Dial, the Senior Director of External Affairs at the Denver Downtown Partnership, said. More than 200,000 visitors flocked downtown Denver in 2023 for the tournament, marking the third busiest day of the year. The influx of visitors during March Madness in 2023 also had a noticeable economic impact. Fans weren't just attending the games, they were spending money. Ticket prices for Ball Arena spiked, with some nosebleed seats costing upwards of $281. Additionally, more than 30% of visitors from 1 to 11 p.m. visited hotels, casinos, and restaurants after the games. The impact of March Madness is also part of a larger recovery trend for downtown Denver post-pandemic. Foot traffic of both residents and visitors has continued to rise, exceeding 2019 benchmarks. Between February and March of 2023, Denver saw over 252,000 overnight trips, a 12.5% increase compared to the previous year. 2024 figures showed a slight dip, with 238,000 overnight trips and a 5.7% decrease year over year. Those numbers are expected to rise again with the NCAA tournament. The Downtown Denver Partnership said improvements to the city's infrastructure could lead to higher turnout. When I started with the Downtown Denver Partnership 8 years ago, we were just beginning to reimagine what downtown could be. Now, as we approach a new chapter, the energy here is contagious. People are rediscovering our city, and events like March Madness give them the perfect reason to come back. Our next article is titled, Cherry Creek Shopping Center Employees Frustrated with New Parking Garage Fees. Starting April 1, employees will have to pay to park for work. There's an ad on the right-hand side that says, with Acrobat AI Assistant, Adobe Acrobat Pro. Denver employees at the Cherry Creek Shopping Center are getting frustrated with mall management after weeks of feeling ignored. Nathan Sutherland, a director at one of the mall's stores, said he's trying to get clarity on the recent change in parking garage fees. In 2017, the mall started charging customers for parking. Now they want employees to pay $20 a month to park at their place of employment. There was a leak on Reddit about our parking garage at the Cherry Creek Shopping Center starting to charge the employees $20 per month to park in order to come to work, Sutherland said. He told Denver 7 it wasn't until the following Monday that managers addressed employees themselves. Right now, they pay a one-time $30 refundable fee to park. Starting April 1, the new changes go into play. That's $240 a year for one employee. Sutherland estimates there are around 2,500 employees at the mall. Mike Wilson, the mall's general manager, said free parking for employees was meant to be a short-term benefit. In a statement, he said, in part, Free tenant parking is not a benefit widely offered at other businesses in the Cherry Creek neighborhood, other than those retailers who choose to pay for their employees' parking. Many of those spaces are significantly more per month. Employees still want to know why they have to pay now and where the money is going. I think the biggest thing for me is the lack of communication from the mall. The transparency is missing, and the reason why. Why are we making it difficult for part-time hourly employees to come to work? It's a challenge to staff our stores already, Sutherland said. Denver 7 also reached out to the company that owns the mall, Topman Company, and left a voicemail but didn't hear back. I think the biggest thing for me is the lack of communication from the mall. The transparency is missing, Sutherland said. It's hard to keep staff with pay scales. It's hard to keep staff with quality of life right now. So adding in an additional layer of cost to an employee just to be able to come to work is going to keep them away. Our next article is titled, Rural Hospital Leader Says Financial Situation Getting Worse. Several hospital CEOs have come together to try and save rural hospitals across the state of Colorado. Dated March 17, 2025. Several hospital CEOs are coming together to try and save rural hospitals across the state of Colorado. These are hospitals that serve huge swaths of the state, but are historically tight on cash and resources. Now the leaders of these hospitals say the situation has only gotten more stressful. Our motto is where you live shouldn't decide if you live, Kevin Stansbury, the CEO of Lincoln Health in Hugo, said. Hugo is about 90 miles away from the eastern edge of Denver and roughly 90 miles away from Burlington. Stansbury said in between there aren't any other hospitals. We did kind of an informal survey in a couple of meetings, and we asked people in the room, generally rural audiences, how far do you travel now for emergency services or even for primary care, Stansbury said. The average is about 35 to 40 miles in many instances. Then the next question is, what happens if your hospital closes? How far do you have to travel then? And often the answer was 100 miles or more. So that's the reality. Rural hospitals historically operate with slim margins, but Stansbury said it's gotten worse since the COVID-19 pandemic. Payroll, medication, and supply costs have all gone up, while reimbursement rates remain flat or declining. They're also closely watching what both the federal government and state lawmakers decide when it comes to budgets and Medicaid. Rural hospitals are going to see a high percentage of Medicare and Medicaid patients, Stanbury said. So in my case, it's about 70% of my patients are either Medicaid or Medicare. On top of that, in the past, legislation coming out of the Colorado General Assembly was sporadic. That's why this legislative session, rural hospital leaders are working to start building out more comprehensive support, including asking for a study to figure out how much money they would need for capital investments. We worked with a young graduate student from Duke University who did a study at the rural hospitals in the state and asked them what capital needs they have to invest in their buildings and new equipment, Stansbury said. And the number came up to show a little bit less than $500 million. It's a big number. We actually think that numbers are much larger than that. This would be money spent on everything from buying more beds to investing in new hospitals. The Hill-Burton Act helped build rural hospitals, but it was the most active in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Most of those buildings that were built with Hill-Burton money are now 50, 60, 70 years old, Stansbury said, and they haven't had the reinvestment because rural hospitals tend to run at very narrow margins. In the meantime, some rural hospitals are starting to eliminate services, including OB care. That means patients are traveling even farther to see a doctor. The proposed legislation to study how much funding would be needed to help rural hospitals is set to be discussed again Monday. However, some are already questioning if it will actually help address the issues rural hospitals are facing and where the money will come from to fund these projects. Our next article is titled, Colorado City's Grants Help Fuel Small Business Employee Pipeline. Greater Arvada Chamber of Commerce spearheaded a small business employee pipeline with city grants that have positively impacted the lives of mentors and interns alike. This began a number of years ago and is becoming a lasting program in the community. People are hard at work at Footers in Arvada doing the prep work needed for upcoming catering events. But it's their younger cohort of interns and apprentices there that makes a big difference. As cooks prep, Arvis Jarvis listens. "I looked at this opportunity as being a sponge," Jarvis told CBS News Colorado. "This is his passion and his place of zen." But just a couple of years ago, as a student at Arvada High School, he wasn't sure of his direction. "I don't even know if I'd have found my passion as a chef if it wasn't for this guide," Jarvis said. Lucky for him, Footers, a catering business on Wadsworth Boulevard, was a part of what's called a work-based learning program in collaboration with the city of Arvada. "We saw it as a really fun opportunity to use that resource to bring on younger interns and apprentices to really help develop into a culinary industry," said Thok Tran, Footers executive chef. "It can be a variety of things, from internships to apprenticeships. Grant money from the city is being used for certifications and online courses to help create a pipeline for young adults entering the workforce. It gives an opportunity for the employer and the employee, or potential employee, to come learn what it means to be within that company and to have that on-the-job training," added Cammie Welch, the president of the Arvada Chamber of Commerce. For Jarvis, it meant having access to training programs essential for working in restaurants. "The grant allowed us to have that resource free, so our employees didn't have to pay it out of pocket," Tran said. "I'm excited to do this," Jarvis said of his apprenticeship period. "This is my passion, and this is who I am." It led to a full-time job with the catering company. "He's really grown with our company as well, and is someone we want to keep long-term," Tran said of Jarvis. Jarvis now serves as a model for the program and those trying to break into a job market that's tougher than ever. Over $400,000 have been dispersed by the chamber to 47 different businesses already, and they hope that, if this round is successful, the city can go back and deliver another round. Our next article is titled "The Rising Threat of Fake News in Financial Markets," dated March 19, 2025. Fake news isn't just a problem for politics. It's also wreaking havoc on financial markets. A new study reveals how deceptive information is being used to manipulate stock prices, causing real financial damage to investors. The study, published in December 2024, in the Journal of Accounting and Economics, finds fake financial news has been on the rise, especially in the years following the 2016 election. According to Austin Moss, assistant accounting professor in the Leeds School of Business and co-author of the study, fake news in the stock market is typically designed to deceive investors about the true value of a company's stock. Without any proof or facts, fake news authors often allege that a company is engaged in fraud or falsifying earnings, he said. Moss and co-author Betty Liu, assistant professor of accounting in Indiana's University's Kelley School of Business, highlight an example in the study involving the real estate company Farmland Partners. In 2018, a single false report claiming 310% of the company's previous year earnings were fabricated caused the stock price to drop by over 40% in just one day, wiping out tens of millions in market value. "Such deceptive stories have real-world impacts," Moss said. "Fake news can manipulate stock prices, leading to short-term volatility while also eroding long-term investor confidence." Why do investors fall for fake news? Moss suggests that in the fast-paced world of financial markets, speed is key. Investors are often so eager to react to information before anyone else that they don't verify it, he said. That rush to act leads to false claims having a real immediate impact on stock prices. The study found companies with less transparent financial reporting are more vulnerable to manipulation. Fake news authors choose firms that are hard to understand, Moss said. Companies that provide less forward guidance and have more complex financial statements are easier targets. The researchers examined the timing of fake articles relative to earnings announcements. They found fake news authors tend to publish more articles in the days leading up to a quarterly earnings releases, capitalizing on the heightened attention surrounding those announcements. Leading up to these big events, there's a lot of attention on the company's results. This is when uncertainty about the company is highest, and that's when fake news can reach a wider audience, Moss said. But once the actual earnings report is released, fake news loses its power as fresh, reliable data takes over. By analyzing the content of 125,475 crowdsourced financial articles from platforms like Seeking Alpha, the researchers found 57% of fake articles discussed accounting-related topics. Compare that to genuine articles, where 88% of the articles focused on accounting. This suggests that while fake news often seeks to exploit accounting details, it is less likely to be as information-heavy or grounded in verifiable data. Fake news authors spread disinformation for a variety of reasons, Moss said. Some want to manipulate stock prices to profit from short-term positions, much like classic pump-and-dump schemes. For example, in the case of Farmland Partners, individuals behind the fake report had taken short positions before the article's release, betting that the stock price would fall. Others create content for online platforms that reward clicks and views, capitalizing on sensational headlines. And still others do it for ideological reasons, even just for the enjoyment of trolling investors, Moss said. The authors often hide behind anonymous profiles, he added, so there's really no or very little reputational cost to producing this fake news, since no one can easily find out who this person is. To mitigate this growing problem, the researchers suggest companies focus on increasing transparency, offering clear guidance, and ensuring their financial statements are easily accessible and understandable. If firms provide more transparent information, it makes it harder for fake news to convince the market, Moss said. For individual investors, Moss advises caution and verification. If you see a claim that seems too outrageous to be true, like an unrealistic jump in earnings or a wild accusation about a company, check the company's financial statements, he said. By comparing these reports to the claims being made, investors can identify discrepancies and avoid falling for fake news. He also warned that the period before earnings announcements is particularly risky. In the 3 to 4 days before earnings announcements, that's when fake news is most likely to spread, Moss cautions. Finally, be aware of publications or websites that crowdsource their articles, he added. Skepticism is one of the best defenses investors have against the manipulation of stock prices by misinformation. Our next article is titled, The Future of ESG, Insights from the Burrage Center's Sustainable Finance Discussions. With intellectual discourse as a foundation for enhancing knowledge, the Burrage Center's Sustainable Finance Discussions, held on March 13, provided a lively platform for experts to gather and share insights on the future of ESG. At a time of uncertainty in the world of environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, initiatives, the Burrage Center's Sustainable Finance Discussions offered a unique opportunity for thought leaders from academia and industry to delve into the complexities of navigating sustainability in an ever-evolving financial world. More than 100 attendees explored topics at the intersection of finance, climate, and technology under the theme of ESG, What Does the Future Hold? Bridging the gap between finance, academics, and practitioners, theory to practice, creates a powerful exchange. Our finance research faculty gain insight into the real-world challenges facing the finance industry While practitioners benefit from the cutting-edge research emerging from the Leeds School of Business, said Sean Davies, Associate Professor of Finance at Leeds and the Faculty Director of the Burridge Center. This collaboration drives innovation and ensures that research and practice evolve hand-in-hand, Davies said. Nourishing relationships within the Leeds ecosystem of faculty, alumni, students, and business partners promotes a thriving, forward-thinking business community. Among the attendees was Amanda Krakauer, Vice President of the Evergreen Team at Bow River Capital. I work in the private equity industry and was invited to attend the summit by a colleague and CU Boulder alum, Krakauer said. The discussions on evolving ESG disclosure requirements highlighted the shifting regulatory landscape, while the deep dive into how investment managers are incorporating ESG principles provided a nuanced perspective on the challenges and opportunities in sustainable investing. The event also provided a valuable opportunity to engage with students, professors, and peers on the future of responsible investing, she said. Leeds faculty Asaf Bernstein and Simona Abbas shared insights from their leading research and scholarship. Bernstein, an associate professor of finance and the co-director of the Center of Research on Consumer Financial Decision-Making, shared key takeaways from his one-year tenure as a senior academic advisor to the Securities and Exchange Commission. He amused the audience with anecdotes about his career trajectory, which included navigating the subprime mortgage crisis of 2008 and the flash crash of 2010. These experiences, he explained, helped shape his ability to assess uncertainty and risk. While the SEC disclosure rule approved in 2024 currently hangs in the balance, Bernstein reminded attendees that blue sky laws, state-level security regulations, existed before the SEC ruling, and they will continue to play a role in ensuring that disclosures are not misleading or false. He further emphasized that private stakeholder standards and preferences always matter. Abbas, an assistant professor of finance, provided a deep dive into ESG classification, revealing gaps between marketing claims and actual fund structures. She, along with assistant professor of finance Andrea Buffa, analyzed mutual funds using ESG terminology and found that only 20% of them truly qualified as impact funds, their painstaking manual review of prospectuses highlighted the inconsistencies in ESG labeling. It's crucial to make these distinctions to understand capital allocation preferences and the real impact ESG investments might have, she said. Following the faculty presentations, Angela Brickmont, the CFO of Denver Water, brought an industry perspective on the financial risks posed by climate change. Climate risks are absolutely playing out, and those are on top of a historic underinvestment in infrastructure, Brickmont said. She emphasized that you can't build anything if you don't have water or energy, cautioning attendees that preparing for climate risk in disclosures is absolutely sound business. Brickmont's remarks underscored a key takeaway. The intersection of finance and sustainability requires not only compliance, but also strategic adaptation for long-term resilience. As attendees asked questions during the Q&A session, one topic centered on the potential of XBRL, or Extensible Business Reporting Language, a framework for creating structured communications. Abbas highlighted XBRL's potential for analyzing massive amounts of data. When you think about it that way, XBRL is a huge, huge help. For Leeds alumnus Harris Cunningham, the managing director of Boulder Angels, the ability to engage in thought-provoking discussion was what made the event especially rewarding. It was a rare opportunity to learn about and ask questions surrounding ESG finance research at CU. I love the diversity of attendees, including lobbying groups, wealth managers, municipal water facilities, angel investors, students, early stage startups, and others. It made for very stimulating conversation during dinner. This concludes this week's Colorado Business Digest, narrated by Mike Hesser.
Attention listeners, we're excited to announce that AfterSight will be moving to our new office on March 26th. As we make this transition, our services will be down most of the day. We apologize for any inconvenience, but truly appreciate your understanding as we start this new chapter. Thank you for listening to AfterSight. If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.